This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Welcome to the 123rd, that is episode 123 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. It is a very spooky show we've got in plan for you today, given that this is our Halloween special. My name is James. I'm going to be hosting again this evening, and with me I have once again got an eclectic mix of Dreamcast experts, and I'm going to start with one this week who is our ears and eyes across the pond. Brian, how is it over in Seattle? Is it still raining? Or
it is. It's gray, not quite raining, but yeah, as far as weather reports are concerned, probably mid upper 50s and dreary and Halloween like as can be. So yeah, this works out. I'm in the mood.
Americans always seem to like to do the whole, the temperature is this, but it feels like this, which I've always found quite amusing about American weather reports. I don't know why.
Wind chill can really mess with stuff and humidity. So I get it. Also, I use Fahrenheit, so my apologies. I don't know what that is. Was that 18?
We'll play the translation game. I've been to Seattle quite a few times, and I always say that the weather over there feels like the UK, but like the extreme versions of the UK. When it's cold, but it's colder. It's hot, but it's hotter. But you get the kind of the all seasons thing like we do over here. Closer to home, then, we have got Dreamcast Junkyard leader, as I'm now referring to you on every show, Lewis. How are you doing? Oh, great one.
Oh, wow. The other day, my wife told me that the toilet roll started spinning of its own accord, so she thinks our house is haunted. Yeah, I feel that was an appropriate story to begin this episode with.
It is that time of year. Yeah. It's the time of year when the spooks and spirits come out to play.
Yeah.
And of course, as always, we've got our resident Dreamcast knowledgeable one, which is Mike in his squeaky chair. Hello, Mike.
Good evening. Yeah, my squeaky chair is obviously possessed. So
I was going to say that the squeaky chair tonight is just the screams of the spirits in your Dreamcast bunker, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm trying to get some scary stories going. You know, the chair's possessed. It's not going to be Mark's story from a few years ago. The horrific story he shared with us on the Halloween episode we did a few years ago, which still haunts my dreams to today. But the squeaky chair will have to do today, I'm afraid.
Good stuff. So, as I said, being the Halloween spook special episode of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod, we're going to keep things on theme this evening. We do have a little bit of news to get through, but then we're going to be focusing on the more scarier side of Dreamcast. And no, I don't mean its untimely death or the lack of EA support or whatever else we want to come up with, which really scared us at the time. But we're going to talk about some Halloween-themed horror games and themes of games just to get us all in the mood for the spooky season. Before we do that, though, obviously we always like to start with a question on the Dreamcast. And to keep things all in the spooky theme, I thought I'd ask the group, what is the piece of media, the film, the game, or something that you guys enjoy every Halloween? Everyone seems to have a film or a game they tend to play during this time of year. So it'd be good to find out what yours are. Lewis, let's come to you first. What have you got for us?
Okay, well, I hope you don't mind if I be a bit greedy, because I've got like one or two things. Undoubtedly my favourite horror game ever is a Super Famicom game that came out exclusively in Japan, but got released pretty early for fan translations, like early, I think it was like 2000, like early 2000s. But that's Clock Tower, a point and click horror game. And it's just always been my favorite. Like, I played it on an emulator years and years ago, and I was just completely in love with like the beautiful but morbid sprite art, and obviously the famous iconic villain from that, who's called the Scissor Man, who chases you with a giant pair of scissors, and the music that plays. It's just, it's slasher film in a video game form, and I absolutely love it. So if anyone hasn't checked that out, I recommend it like wholeheartedly. And then at the risk of sounding like a pretentious film school student, my favourite horror movie is The Shining. I just think it's like the best mix of atmosphere. I love the story. I know it's not quite accurate to the book it's based on, and even Stephen King himself kind of criticised that. But like, Jack Nicholson in that film is just probably one of the best movie acting roles I've ever seen in action. It's just, it's so good. I like the fact that it's like creepy and atmospheric, but also like it kind of has me thinking as well, rather than just it being like a, you know, a jump scare or something. Like, I love that film.
It is a classic, to be fair, but you know, I'll let you off, because if you're going to be cliched, I think Halloween is the time where cliches are allowed as far as movies and things are concerned. But yeah, I remember watching that film when I was really young, actually, and it terrified me to the point where I didn't watch it again until many, many years later. But very, very good.
The thing that's funny is like, there's a scene of it that plays in the film Twister, and there's people who, when they were kids, they watched Twister and they were creeped out by the bit where they're watching The Shining.
Good stuff. Let's come to you then, Mike, next. What about you? What are your consumptions during Halloween, apart from opious amounts of sweets, of course?
Yeah. So, not many, because most of them aren't vegan, but that's a whole other story, and I'll get Andrew started if I do. So, to be fair, most of my year is Halloween themed. Anyone knows my house or my interests, everything is Halloween themed in my house all year round. So it's difficult for me to pick on one thing. However, I'm going to pick basically two films that are pretty much my favorite films as well, both Halloween themed. So first one, is Sleepy Hollow. That's the Tim Burton and Johnny Depp film. I'm not a massive fan of Tim Burton. But for some reason, Sleepy Hollow is just an amazing film. It's got enough sort of B-movie style to it, and also just has a little bit of campiness to it, which is obviously what we want on Halloween. A great film. But my favourite film of all time is also Halloween-themed, and that is Witchfinder General. So I think in America it's probably known as The Conqueror Worm, I think, possibly. Witchfinder General, which is Vincent Price film, Tygon Films, I believe, made it. It's just a really cheap, again, probably sort of a exploitation sort of film, that just has enough about it. Vincent Price obviously was always amazing in everything he appeared in. And it just has that sort of historical witch finder theme, and yeah, just a mix of 70s, 60s campness, poor special effects mixed with a genuinely uneasy style. There's a few films like the folk horror sort of genre from the 1960s and 70s are my sort of thing. There's a few other films like it. Obviously, you've got the classic Wicker Man, but also something Blood on Satan's Claw, which is also one of my favourite films, which actually had the novel of the original script published a couple of months ago, which I've been enjoying in the last couple of weeks. So anything like that, sort of old, slightly crappy horror films.
Good stuff. And Brian, I'm assuming, you know, being that you're American and Americans do Halloween way, way more than we do over here, or maybe they're not so much anymore, used to be. I assume it's a big holiday for you, or are you... is it just another day for you?
It is and it isn't. It is in the sense that it's, you know, we'll look for any excuse to get drunk with our friends. so, yeah, absolutely. You know, that's a big part of the festivities, where we can work candy and some of the other stuff it works out all right, but in costumes, of course. As far as like media and movies and games, I feel a little bit out of the loop here because I actually don't watch a ton of horror movies outside of maybe more like suspense stuff and classic like Hitchcock films. But I've been trying to rack my brain as you all were talking about your stuff, and I feel like maybe where games and movies or horror movies meet is an area where I'm kind of interested. I mean, I love Kenji Eno and Warp, the original D game for the Saturn and 3DO. I think I've played it on those two. We actually did a whole episode of our Titancast podcast last year, around this time last year, diving into D. And really just talking about how much we love it kind of immerses you into a, you know, brain dungeon of your murderous father's creation. And you have very little agency other than the abstract puzzles that it asks you to figure out. And you have a time limit that, you know, it encourages you to fail and then restart the game to try to finish within the 2-hour limit. And so that's just such a perfect bite size chunk of time that I can go back and try to speed run it each year. And that kind of helps get me into the Halloween spirit. I absolutely love that game. And I think that's probably it.
Good stuff. For me then, I think film wise, I'm going to be even more cliched than Lewis, because for me, the original Halloween is my go-to every year. Just because it's obviously an awesome film. But it's just one of those traditions, really, that I've always watched Halloween, every single Halloween, the original. And so it will be something that continues forever, I think, as far as traditions for me. As far as games are concerned, with what Brian said, I think Halloween games, for me, have got to be kind of ones that you can just kind of speed run through in a few hours or a day or so. And so my go-to every year is a little game that I really, really, really enjoyed when it came out, and play it every year now, which is a game called Costume Quest. Not sure if anyone's played that.
Oh, I know the name, yeah.
It's it was on Xbox 360, I think. Basically, it's like a little sort of RPG, I suppose, in lack of a better term, where these kids go trick-or-treating and you've got to go around different houses and sort of, as you go to battles, the suit, the costume that you're wearing kind of transforms you into that thing, whether it's a robot or a dinosaur or whatever, and that's where the turn-based battles take place. But it was made by Double Fine Productions. So it's like dripping with charm, obviously with Tim Schafer and some of the stuff that he does in it. For those who obviously aren't familiar, he's the guy behind Psychonauts and things like Brutal Legend and stuff. But yeah, really great game, really great thing to pick up and play every year. And if you haven't played it before and you like that sort of cartoony trick-or-treating aesthetic, I wholly recommend going back and giving it a bash.
I actually have that on my Xbox library. I think it was like a free download or something at some point, so I'll give that a go. Yeah,
it's compatible with current Xboxes. I think it might even be on Game Pass now, you know. So yeah, definitely download it and give it a whirl. It's very good. I was just going to say as well, I know a lot of people dislike, you know, modern gaming with games as a service and, you know, constant updates and stuff. But I just wanted to shout out that I do love it when games introduce seasonal content as well. Even stupid things like I play a lot of Madden, and on the current Madden, there's like a Halloween mode type thing where you're earning candy corns, which you can trade in for other stuff. And it's just, I don't know, it's things to get you in the mood, isn't it? Get you in the spirit that doesn't take you away from the game you play on a daily basis. Right, so hopefully everyone is suitably spooked after that little intro. So let's just quickly, there's an item of news that we didn't discuss on the previous Dream Pod that we did, the newscast that we did. Just really wanted to mention around the new Retrobit controllers that are going to be available for the Dreamcast, presumably at some point relatively soon. Recently, the prototypes were shown off of both the wired version of the controller and the wireless version of the controller. There is an article up on the blog, which I'm sure Lewis will include in the show notes. So go and check that out. But just to get some initial impressions then, guys, when you saw the prototypes, what did you guys think about them?
Yeah, so I felt okay about them. Like, I mean, I don't really have too much interest in like wireless controllers. I think there's been kind of like this whole thing with people wanting wireless controllers, but I think maybe my setup just doesn't necessarily benefit from it. Like the wire doesn't need to reach that far for me to play my game. So my thought on it was love the sort of idea of the redesigned Saturn or even like the ASCII pad style D-pad. And I love the sort of analog stick with like the recession rather than the kind of dome like the actual Dreamcast controller has. My thing, and I mentioned this in my article on the blog that I wasn't as keen on, is they've kind of gone for this sort of slanted, kind of like in the way that maybe like the Saturn or almost like a little bit like the original Xbox, like Fat Duke controller. So it's got the A, B, X, Y, and then Z and C buttons. And I don't know, it's kind of put the X, Y, A, and B in a different layout.
Yeah, see what you mean, yeah.
And a pad that I know Brian is a fan of, the Mad Cat Dream Pad, does it in the way where it preserves the layout of the X, Y, A, and B, but puts them in a, but still has the C and Z there. So I would have liked if they'd have gone more for that, where it preserves the original layout of the buttons. But I suppose it's something you could get used to, I guess. There was a lot of gripes. After I put up the article, I didn't really think too much about it, but like, people really weren't liking the wireless version. And this is the same kind of design that the Retro Fighters controller has, where instead of putting the VMU in the controller, you've got this like, dongle thing that does that. And yeah, I don't know if for the price they would be able to work it into actually being in the controller. I don't know.
No, in speaking to people, it seems like it would need to be Bluetooth for it to actually, for the VMU to work wirelessly, as opposed to the what is it, the 2. Whatever gig wireless they're using obviously that's going to be cost related. I guess that is a bit of a disappointment. I'm personally not interested in, wouldn't be interested in the wireless one anyway, because like you, Lewis, the setup with a Dreamcast doesn't really justify needing a wireless. I could be interested in the wired version, just because it, I mean, like you said, it's basically an original Dreamcast controller mold with some different button combination, and the stick looks quite nice. The D-pad looks horrendous. Obviously, you need to see what it's like in gameplay terms. But obviously, it's going to be price dependent. I mean, if the wired ones come out and they're like £40, then it's just not going to be worth it, is it?
Retrobit tends to be a fairly all right on price, I think. I can't remember how much. I've got one of their Saturn pads. I can't remember how much I paid for it, but I don't think it's too dear.
At the very least, I guess it'll be nice to have an option for a new Dreamcast controller that kind of, well, it does look exactly like the original, as we say, apart from the button layout. But the actual, you know, the size and shape of the controller is essentially the same as the OG version. So I guess it's nice to be able to have that, because obviously new versions of new old stock is getting, you know, is depleting in availability as the years roll on. So that'll be nice. Brian, Mike, what about you guys?
I don't see the point. I think it looks absolutely hideous in terms of the fact that button layout is going to be an absolute pain to use. The D-pad looks atrocious. I'm not a fan of the controller anyway, the Dreamcast controller. It's always been one of my least favorite controllers. So yeah, they fixed a couple of the bits. Obviously, you know, the wireless one obviously has the option of wireless, which is great. But like the both of you, it doesn't have any use for me. I don't play on a big screen. But it's just, yeah, I don't, the form of the Dreamcast controller just doesn't feel that comfortable to me. And I think actually, if they'd actually done something different and done a different kind of design, I'd be more interested in that regard. I don't really see the point of this. Maybe I'm missing something. yeah, it's great to have the six buttons on, you know, like the Saturn pad, like the ASCII pad, but I've got those pads, so I don't really need this. I'm not the target market, obviously, but yeah, it doesn't fit right with me. The button, as you both said, I think, obviously, I'd love to see what it's actually like when it comes out, but the buttons just look way too cramped to me. And if you're used to, the problem is a lot of Dreamcast playing is nostalgia, but also that muscle memory of playing games. If I'm playing on a Dreamcast controller, the Dreamcast controller shell, my hands aren't going to be able to adjust to the fact that the buttons are now slightly different layout. It's a missed opportunity for me.
I totally agree with everything Mike just said. If you remember, Retrobit announced this years ago.
Yeah.
They were rolling out their original suite of really just Saturn controller I mean, they're basically, you know, model for model or one for one remoldings of those, yeah, in a way.
Officially licensed as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the big draw at the time, because it was one of the first third-party controllers in a while that had Sega's kind of buy-in on that licensing. But in talking with some of their reps way back then, it sounded like one of the big hang-ups with the Dreamcast controller version was going to be finding molds that were precise, because it sounded like those were a little more difficult to procure than the Saturn ones. And honestly, I don't really, yeah, like Mike said, like, I don't know if that's really the best place for their attention to have gone. But I mean, I'm sure there are tons of other factors, and noting that these are still what we know of today. These are still prototypes, so these are likely to change. But, you know, honestly, the difference between then and now is that we have so many options for Dreamcast controllers, right? You have the Retro Fighters, the Striker DC. I've gone through a couple. I have my own qualms with it, but I do feel like something along that is probably the right track for what I would want to use. It's more ergonomic, a little more modern form fitting that fits into the palms outward, unlike the original Dreamcast controller that kind of had that weird, you had to like pull your wrists in before holding up, and that was just kind of a weird, uncomfortable ergonomic situation, in my opinion. But I'm glad that those options exist. And then also, you got the Wingman SD, which you can use any controller and anything on it, and I love that. Everything from racing wheels to arcade pads to I feel like that. Ever since that came out, my need for something like this is drastically reduced.
As you guys have been talking, we've just been looking at it again, and I think, obviously, I don't want to shit on the D-pad too much because I've not used it, but it's an interesting, you know, they've obviously compromised the button layout to make it more suitable for beat-em-ups, presumably, with the extra Z and C button. But then if you've got a really bad D-pad as part of that, it kind of negates the purpose of the control pad in the first place.
Is it not just a replica of a Saturn pad? Because everyone, like,
yeah, it's supposed to be.
Because that's obviously, everyone says that's like the best controller. Yeah,
maybe it's just me then, and it just didn't look good to me. But
the D pad looks terrible. I mean, the D pad, this is a Saturn sort of style D pad, but it's not on a Saturn pad. You know, if you look at a Saturn pad, the D pad's in a recess in the pad.
Right,
it fits perfectly. I mean, again, How many years is it now? 29 years since the Saturn came out. It's pretty amazing that Sega pretty much made the best ever controller so many years ago, because everyone's still trying to copy and make the Saturn pad for every other console, because it's just perfect for 2D fighters, isn't it? But yeah, the D-pad looks absolutely hideous.
A sloppy copy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll reserve final judgment, obviously, until they're in our hands and we can see how they actually perform with your favorite Dreamcast games. But let's just say right now we're a bit indifferent, let's say, about these upcoming controllers. All right. right, moving on then. So let's get into the meat of today's episode, which is obviously going to be Halloween or spooky themed. So what we're going to do is we are going to go around the table, as it were, and we are going to talk about our favorite Dreamcast game that is either horror themed or it's got some sort of horror or Halloween area or level or whatever it might be. And then also we're going to talk about what our favorite or what our most appropriate spooky or horror songs are from a Dreamcast game. And in the wonders of editing, I'm sure you'll be able to hear those just after we've discussed them. So, Mike, let's come to you first because you're first on my list.
Excellent.
What Dreamcast game gives you the EBGBs then? What's the spookiness that you can think of from a Dreamcast game?
Yeah, so I spent a long time thinking of what I was going to pick for this, which is quite amusing because I was the one who came up with the idea for the episode. But I could have picked several games, which are great choices, but I actually picked a relatively recent indie release called Witching Hour. Now, this is a game which is actually a mod. It's a Wolfenstein 3D mod. Came out absolutely ages ago, I believe, on PC. But it had a sort of a semi-official indie release. The original developer of the mod gave permission to be released. They've since rescinded that permission. So it's probably the most uncommon indie game on Dreamcast, which had an actual release. But basically, it's a one-level Wolfenstein 3D mod. It has basically you're a group of four teenagers break down in the woods, and you have to find your friends. And to do that, you have to get oil for the van. You have to get some other bits as well. And there is a monster, let's say, in the woods, which will stalk you. Now, the concept's really, really simple. The game's really, really simple. It's incredibly lo-fi. It's incredibly old school. It has absolutely zero production value in terms of anything other than what you'd expect a Wolfenstein 3D mod to be. But it manages, within its incredibly simple premise, to have an absolutely outstanding atmosphere. It really is the Dreamcast equivalent to the found footage indie film. It has this sort of really low-key, very synthy soundtrack going on, which is just really unnerving. It has, I mean, those of you who've played games in recent years, like Alien Isolation, for instance, those of you who've played it will know the sheer fear of when the creature first comes into view, when it first stalks you. This game has that sort of feel. Now, obviously, the creature isn't a perfect screen replica like the Alien game was. It is a 2D pixel abomination, but it's just really, really effective. The entire package had like a little map with the indie game. It had some like a film cell. It really lent into being a B movie theme, and yeah, in terms of atmosphere, just fantastic. Now, you know, people might seek this out if they listen to this episode. Some people will probably come away thinking I'm insane and thinking that I've just recommended a game which is literally terrible. But I think you have to have a certain mindset and a certain sort of appreciation for bedroom programmed mod community based titles. And this one just does it really, really well. We've had some really good indie releases in the last few years, which are Halloween themed. But this one for me was a real surprise. When I sat down to review it, I thought it was going to be pretty terrible. And it managed to get into my brain like the best horror films do. So in my opinion, that's a pretty amazing result.
I'm just going to dive in here because I've played this as well. Just for people listening, you can actually just download it for free. It was put out for free to download. I think it's been around for quite a while, and then the indie release came a bit later. But it is like Mike says, it is it like surprisingly really atmospheric. And I know what you mean about the music. It's got this kind of like drone, like kind of a synthy kind of drone that plays, and
yeah.
It's got a great atmosphere. I will say it is, I found it quite hard in the sense that whenever you start up, you know, there's these so many items you have to find, and each one, I think it randomizes where it is each time.
Yeah.
So I think I managed to get maybe like three and then I get caught, but, it is really cool. And you know what, it's kind of like, you know, like Brian was mentioning the game D, like that game. Yeah. Like the FMV doesn't look quite as good as it used to. But that maybe actually makes it more creepy. That kind of like, sort of, like you were saying, like in this game, there's sort of lo-fi look to it, makes it really eerie and kind of, and dark. I recommend it, but you will get lost in the trees a lot. But it is good fun. And it, you know, if you get caught, you're like, oh, let me go again. Like I'm going to give it another try, you know? So it is really cool. And I recommend it as well. And I particularly recommend Mike's review of it, where he has like a
great game.
Yeah. Like, it's like a monologue that starts it off. It's fantastic. Yeah. Your creative writing hat that goes on there, Mike, is great.
So Mike, what about spooky sounds then? What Dreamcast game theme tune have you gone for to get us in the mood for Halloween?
Yeah, so I'm gonna cheat because we all cheat, don't we? It's part of the fun of the podcast. I have a pick which I will say in a second, but I do want to also bring up one song from an indie game, which is from Battle Crust, which is a Josh Bod Pixel Heart released from a few years ago. There's a song on there called Nightmare Time, which is a really great electronic sort of Castlevania vibe, I suppose, song. That's really good. The song I've actually chosen because, you know, again, I love the campiness of Halloween. I love the sort of the ritual, I suppose, and that sort of nostalgia bit as well. I've gone for the Haunted Mansion, which is on World Quest Magical Racing Tour. It's a Halloween classic, isn't it? I mean, you know, what else can you say? If there'd been a Misfits song in any of the Dreamcast games, I would have picked that, but I couldn't, so I had to pick Haunted Mansion. It's a great song. Nice sort of, you know, child friendly, happy song. That the game's got some amazing tracks anyway. The Pirates of the Caribbean song's also very good, but Haunted Mansion for me.
Happy haunts materialize and begin to vocalize. Grim grinning ghosts about to socialize. Now don't close your eyes and don't try to hide.
Or a silly spook may sit by your side.
Shrouded in a dark disguise.
They pretend to terrorize. Grim grinning ghosts about to socialize.
Climbs high on the dead oak tree.
Spooks arrive for the midnight spree.
Creepy creeps with eerie eyes.
Start to shriek
and harmonize. Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize.
When you hear the knell of a requiem bell,
we're toasting where spirits dwell.
Restless bones etherealize.
Wise as spooks of every size.
Okay, Brian. Coming over to you then, and we'll go back to which Dreamcast game then gives you the spooks.
Yeah, so the games I chose for this, both for like kind of the level and then the song, these are probably games I would play anyway around this time of year, if not any time of year. But the first is Illbleed, and you can really just pick any level from this, and for those who may not be as familiar with it, it didn't sell a lot of copies, but it's kind of the follow-up project from Shinya Nishigaki's team at Crazy Games, which was formerly known as Climax Graphics, which had developed Blue Stinger, which I would probably say is my favorite Dreamcast game, full stop. But it was also a very misunderstood game. I think a lot of people tried to compare Blue Stinger in the realm of like a Silent Hill or a Resident Evil at the time of its release. And honestly, it was not really like either of those games. I mean, I feel like, you know, some of the iconography you could kind of interpret as horror. It was a little more sci-fi. It was it certainly leaned into the schlocky, you know, B-movie type vibe. But I don't think I would describe any of the actual gameplay as horror. There was no scarcity. There was not really a lot of suspense. It was pretty much an action game with a lot of exploration. If anything, it was more of a beat 'em up. And so when it came to Illbleed later on, this, you know, that was much more of a grounded kind of survival horror experience. And so it's one I definitely like to go to, usually for practical and sentimental reasons. Practically, I always forget what VMU I saved my old data on. And even then, you can't just, like, once you clear the game, you can't just pick whatever levels to go back to. So I usually end up just playing the first level again, the home run of death, around this time of year. And it's kind of a nice microcosm of what the game is about, which is basically a virtual haunted house or house of horror, as the promotional materials had deemed it. And in it, you really don't have a lot of agency to, you're almost beholden to the various traps and set pieces of the environment. And your job is to use a combination of your senses and tools you have to suss out, like, what potential traps can be, and try to disarm them or otherwise die in a variety of ways. Enemies can kill you. There is a little bit of combat, but otherwise you can, you know, your heart can explode, I suppose. I don't, or heart attacks, whatever it's depicting when you trigger too many traps without disarming them. That can be an issue. There's bleed damage that can kill you or at least suck your life away, your stamina. So there's a lot of different ways that you can lose. But if you go through kind of a plotting and you're very careful and you try to analyze all of the different points where traps are, it ends up being a pretty it's a kind of a fun haunted house vibe that you can really inhabit and enjoy for that time. There is kind of a trade-off in that you get extra money and extra points if you go through the stages quicker. And so there's kind of a push-pull between trying to accept some of the risks of traps and monsters and stuff hurting you. But otherwise, the home run of death is, I would say it's like a horror hotel, which is a vibe I'm a sucker for. And so you're kind of in the whole premise is that this hotel owner had his son who was, like, really into baseball, and he really kind of forced his son to be a baseball prodigy to the point that he built a baseball diamond in the basement of this hotel. And then one day some teenagers accidentally set a fire, burned the hotel down while they were in it, killed his son, which is kind of funny, just because, I mean, not funny, but, you know, he has this whole space outside that you start the level in. Like, he could have just built a baseball field out there. And yeah. So the fact he had to do it in the basement, like, already just sets the stage for the tragedy of this thing. At any rate, you come sometime later. It turns out the owner's still there. He's been transformed into a monster somehow. And so he's haunting the place and set all these traps and is ready to, with his blowtorch, to kill anybody who sets foot in it, including you. And it's just a really nice, maybe it takes like an hour to play through it if you're taking your time. It's just a nice kind of ritual for me to go back to this time of year and really get into the Halloween spirit.
I think Illbleed is definitely one of those hidden gems in the Dreamcast library, for sure, that I think a lot of people don't really know what the game is or have never heard of it. And it's actually a really, really good, fun game. I think, Lewis, you're a big fan of that game as well, aren't you?
Yeah. And Mike is as well, I know for sure. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's definitely the most unique horror game. Like, it definitely doesn't go for any of the same sort of trying to be Resident Evil kind of stuff that maybe something like Carrier does. It's just, yeah, the gameplay's unique. Like, this whole, made this joke before. Like, it's kind of like the way you detect these traps and then try to avoid them is like kind of Minesweeper. And so instead of, like, you know, picking up stuff and, you know, crafting all this stuff that you know you might do in like a Resident Evil game. You sort of slowly plodding through these levels, and it's quite tense as you go. So yeah, it's the whole thing. I mean, you probably got it from everything Brian was explaining. The game's insane. Like, it's just mad. Like, yeah, I'm sure Mike can jump in and save my rambling here, but yeah.
Yeah, the game's crazy as shit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to add to that. Like, some of the later levels, too, I mean, really kind of go off the rails thematically. Like the one, you know, there's, you know, because the whole idea is it's like a haunted theme park or a horror theme park by this rich dude who's like, come to my theme park. If you survive, I'll give you $100 million or whatever. And then, of course, nobody does. And you come there. You know, the whole reason you're there is to find your friends who went and disappeared. So you have to rescue them. But like some of those, the later levels, like, you know, there's one that's, you know, kind of in like a logging mill. And so you're fighting marionette, like wood puppet guys.
There's like a Toy Story one as well.
There's a Toy Story one where I don't know how much we want to spoil. So there are some spoilers here, but it's like you're in this mall/toy store that you transform into like kind of a Woody from Toy Story like puppet that you're controlling that whole level for no goddamn reason. It's just, oh, you're this character now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and there's like a lot of cool references to other Sega properties and other horror tropes and films and stuff that's you know, pretty fun and rewarding.
Brian, introduce us then to, or introduce your song for us then to have a little listen.
Yeah, so this is from the, you know, I know everybody loves like Pumpkin Hill, and that's kind of a pretty iconic Halloween style, whatever, from Sonic Adventure 2. I really like Sonic Adventure 1's Red Mountain, the soundtrack to that stage. And so there's the exterior part, which you're scaling the mountain and ziplining and doing a bunch of platforming outside. And then once you get to the halfway point, you drop below into what's basically a big volcano. And in the magma chamber, whatever you're running around, it's the lava kind of fills up as you scale to the top. And the music really kind of switches at that point to emphasize like the urgency of that situation with some like metal riffs and kind of a nice, I don't know, just like the bass line is just really rolls through it, and it kind of complements the iconography as well, is all like, you know, skeletons and, but yeah, it's like kind of like a prison full of like ghosts, and there's spiders and bats and a lot of skulls. I mean, the whole name of the song is Red Hot Skull. And so you got tombstones shaped like skulls that are dancing. You got regular tombstones that aren't dancing or shaped like skulls. They're just there for some reason. And it's, yeah, it's like a graveyard slash prison slash volcano. And then, yeah, it all kind of comes to a head as you have to constantly, you know, keep going to the top through a variety of platforming and running as the lava rises up. So it's, I don't know, I feel like just the music there really hits that pretty strongly. And then also what's interesting is that the melody line is kind of a minor key from the exterior soundtrack, or the melody of the exterior. And so it's kind of a fun, subtle shift that you, if you pay attention to it, between the two halves of the level, which is pretty cool. It's also got a little bit of like Cypress Hill vibes, I'd say.
Yeah, it's definitely like a sample going on there. It feels like a song I've heard, but I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah. Oh, and if you try to watch it on YouTube, there is a cut that in the sample, it substitutes in Toad's like yelling voice from, yeah, which is actually, it fits it perfectly. So I'd recommend that.
Right, Lewis, coming to you then.
Right, so I thought of something a bit different to do, because, like, you know, if I've probably mentioned, like, D2, like, on every podcast, and that's probably my favourite survival horror game on the Dreamcast, and I love that so much. But yes, I thought I'd do something a bit different, and this is in Army Men, Sarge's Heroes, but specifically the Dreamcast port, which makes this kind of even more special to this podcast, I suppose. And in that game, for some reason, the people who ported it were really obsessed with putting photographs of themselves and other people they knew in the game, and we've seen this before where, like, devs kind of put themselves in games and it's kind of fun, you know, in, like, Mortal Kombat, that thing you do where the dev appears at the bottom of the screen. But these are kind of cursed, and so you've got a few. So you've got, I think it's in the first level, which means it's also in, like, what, some of the demos for this game. There's a cabin you can go in, and if you, like, angle the camera just right in this, like, air duct or, like, the roof beam in the ceiling, there's this picture of a little girl, and everyone just assumes that it's, you know, one of the dev's daughters or something. But then, you know, I saw a video of this, and there's these comments like, is this a missing child? You know, because the internet loves to speculate about stuff like that, but, like, it's probably just a dev's kid. So that's kind of creepy, you know, and, like, there's people who comment and they're like, you know, when I was a kid, I saw this and I was like, what? Because it's a game about, you know, essentially like the Toy Story Army Men, and then you just see this real person's face randomly in the roof. So that's kind of creepy. But then the real creepy thing, and I saw it's the video that where this is shown off, is this guy who essentially had this game as a kid, and he stumbled upon this by accident. And you can tell from the video that almost like he's reliving trauma from his childhood. At the end of the level Scorch, there's a wall, and you just assume, like, you just go past it, go to the end of the level. But if you crawl through it, you end up in this room with just faces on each wall of, like, one of the devs' heads, like, kind of sewed onto a big toe. And it's just a bit weird.
Lovely, lovely.
Yeah, yeah, it's very strange. And, like, when this guy's recounting this in his video, he's like, oh my God, this is it. This is it. Oh my God. You can tell as a kid, this absolutely traumatized him. And then just to kind of add to this, there's loads of cheats in this version of the game where if you type in certain things, it'll make every wall and floor a picture of one of the devs or, like, the dev team. And I mean, it's a game made by the 3DO company. Of course, it's got loads of real life people in it. You know, I mean, they loved all that kind of stuff, 3DO, but yeah, it's just really creepy. Like, check out the video, maybe check it out for yourself. But yeah, very weird. Bit weird that they put it in, like, a kid's game.
Yep.
Good stuff. What about your music then, Lewis? Introduce it for us.
I feel like something properly spooky is in Resident Evil 2. It's the save room music. I mean, this is a game that's synonymous with a few consoles, but I just love the save room music. I love that it's kind of calming, but also got kind of a sinister edge to it. So it's this idea that you're all right for now.
Yeah, but you know what's outside the door, sort
yeah,
of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's kind of a shame that in the remake that they just, I think it's just silence, if I recall, when you go in the save room, which is a shame, but beautifully eerie music. So yeah, that's my pick.
Yeah, an absolute classic. That definitely would have been my choice as well if you hadn't beaten me to it, oh, Lewis. I think it's, as you say, there's just something about it where it's not in-your-face scary, but it's almost an unsettling calmness, isn't it? Because, as I said, you know that's not the full story. All right, then. So mine, then, just to finish up this section, when we were talking about our favorite kind of spooky or horror level or Dreamcast game, I think we've all said it. We all wanted to go a bit left field to avoid going for the obvious choices. And I think none of us have actually gone for any obvious choices. Obviously, there's a ton of horror-themed games on the Dreamcast that we could have picked from. I actually went for the newest Dreamcast game, which is Driving Strikers, obviously a game we've spoken about an awful lot recently, a game that a lot of us have been playing an awful lot recently online. But there's actually an arena on there, a level on there called Cobblestone Castle. And I think it's just, I wanted to just mention it because it's so atmospheric. It's, you know, it's your typical spooky castle type environment from that sort of era. You know, think to Bowser's Castle levels on Mario Kart 64 or things like that. But it's just there. It's in the nighttime. It's outdoors in like a courtyard. Obviously, the cobblestone all around. It's got the candles, and the best part of it is just got pouring rain constantly in the level as well. So I just like levels like that, and I think whilst it's not scary, it's definitely got that eerie, spooky kind of feel about it in a game that is obviously not scary at all. So that was my choice. Not much more to say about it other than I think it captures the kind of the spooky vibes pretty well. It's got a really good theme to that level as well, which I didn't pick as my sound. But yeah, definitely one to check out if you do own a copy of Driving Strikers. And if you don't own a copy of Driving Strikers, make sure it's on your Christmas list for sure. As far as my song goes, I think I've gone for one of the worst games on the Dreamcast, even worse than that racing game you're all thinking of.
Roadsters.
Yeah, I'll take that, which is Nightmare Creatures 2, which was a pretty poor PlayStation port over to the Dreamcast. And whilst the game itself is very much a letdown, shall we say, I think the soundtrack is just, it just oozes spookiness and eeriness, and it just makes you feel very uncomfortable. So hopefully we'll finish off this section with everyone kind of crawling around in their seats or in your car or wherever you are listening to this podcast right now, because yeah, I think it's something that is pretty spooky. Right, so hopefully you're all suitably in the Halloween mood now after hearing our selections and listening to us talk about scary games for the past, I don't even know how many minutes we've been going now. So we're gonna round off this show with a little bit more of an upbeat section, which is, as those regular listeners will know, I love to do my 20 questions Dreamcast game at the end of it. Obviously, we've got Lewis and Mike returning from their victory in the last episode. And Brian, this is your first time playing 20 questions, I believe.
Yeah, what are the rules?
Okay, I was going to say a little reminder of the rules for you and also for anyone listening who's not maybe heard the others. So you guys have got 20 questions to ask me to try and work out the Dreamcast game that I am thinking about. The only rules are that you can only ask a question that I can answer with a yes or a no. There will be other rules, but I'll make them up as I go along. Just don't do anything stupid, like ask if it's got three words in the title, like Mike and Loz tried to get away with previously. Yeah, and the only other rule to be made aware of is if you ask me, is it this game? That's your last question, regardless of what number we are on.
Oh, interesting.
And we work as a team.
And you work as a team, yes. So it's a collaborative effort. All right, so I've got my game. It's down to you guys now to try and narrow this down. Off you go.
I mean, it's got to be Spirit of Speed this time, surely. At some point, he's going to pick it. I mean, it's the odds are going that. What do we do? Same option as last time? Ask if it's a. Was it released in all three regions? Or?
Yeah, yeah. James, was it released in all three regions?
Yes.
Okay.
Damn it.
Was it an arcade adaptation?
No.
Is it a Sega published game?
Yes.
Now, I know James. I think it's going to be a racing game.
You say this every single time.
It has been a racing game once, hasn't it? Has it been a racing game at all? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was the time you didn't get it, Mike.
I'm going to ask it. Is it a racing game?
No.
Sega published.
Sega, not a racing game.
And not an arcade conversion, yeah.
I mean, that kind of narrows it down a bit. I mean, are we allowed to, like, brainstorm and talk about and mention titles?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I mean, what does that leave us with? Like,
Headhunter?
And oh, it's not a racing game. Sorry.
Not MSR, no. Headhunter, Sonic Adventure, Sonic 2.
No, it doesn't narrow it down at all.
Headhunter was just Europe, as I learned last time.
Oh, sure,
time.
Yeah. So, yeah, of course it was. Of course it was.
Sonic Adventure, Sonic Adventure 2, Choo Choo Rocket.
Toy Commander.
Is that Sega
published? Developed?
Yeah.
Was it developed by Sonic Team?
No.
Okay. So okay. That's three gone.
I can. Toy Commander could be a.
Also gets rid of PSO.
Yeah, it does. Samba.
I feel like genres are a good question because you can really.
Yeah.
Should we ask if it's a rhythm game, sort of a music based game? Because that takes a few Sega hits out of the way.
Yeah.
Is it a music based game, James?
It is not a music-based game.
Okay, so it's not Space Channel.
What question's that, James?
That is question number six.
Six, and we have 20, right. So not Samba or Space Channel 5. Yeah.
Well, also Samba's an arcade game, too.
Bit of a sort of out-there pick. Is Sega Extreme Sports all regions?
It's a racing game, isn't it, surely?
Can we ask, is it a sports game?
Is it a sports game?
No, it's not a sport game.
That takes like half off the board, I think.
So it's not Dynamite Cop because that's an arcade game as well.
Is there anything fighting that it would be, or
is it a fighter?
No, it's not a fighting game.
Oh,
what about like House of the Dead 2? That's like,
don't ask the. Oh wait, are we asking each other?
Oh no, yeah, I'm asking these guys. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's got to be.
House of the Dead 2 is an arcade game.
Arcade, what's this?
Oh shit, yeah.
Type of the Dead was an arcade game as well, but was it in the arcades first?
It didn't come out in Europe.
No, it didn't. Right. Oh, we win this again. Oh no,
Shenmue. It can't be Shenmue. That seems too obvious. Oh. Shoot, because every other AM2 game was an arcade game, basically.
It's got to be Shenmue, isn't it?
No, I mean, I'd say that.
Every time you discuss, and every time a game is discussed, Mike goes, it's got to be this game, hasn't it?
I was, it just seems too obvious.
Like, did Yu Suzuki have any involvement, maybe? Could be.
Well,
a question.
I mean, well, I think that's a wasted question, because that would just get one game out of the way, because all the others are arcade games, right?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say Outrigger, but yeah, arcade game. What's a question you can ask to kind of ask if it's Shenmue, but also maybe if it's not, help us out?
We've only got, like, 12 questions left. There's only about 12 games I can think of, which would be fit into the answers. So, was it released on more than one disc, possibly? You could ask that.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Was it released on more than one disc?
No.
So not Shenmue, okay.
Oh, but you had to think about it.
What else does that rule out?
What about Echo the Dolphin?
Oh, good shout.
So... Oh, is it marine... Is there a marine setting, water-based setting?
Yes.
Yeah, it's got to be. What other games are we... High Grave Thunder is a racing game. Yeah. Sports as well. It's got to be Echo.
Well, we got a few more questions.
How many questions have we got left, James?
That was 10.
Oh, we're... Yeah, we got a lot.
Does the game have an animal protagonist?
Yes.
Is the animal a mammal?
Yes.
Are there sharks?
Yes, there are sharks.
Yeah, just ask all the way up to 19 and then give it.
I think we gotta make use of it.
Was the game developed by Appaloosa?
Yes.
There we go. Nice
and
easy.
I love everyone's too afraid to ask the final question.
Was our protagonist defending the future from something?
Yes.
I think Lewis has to ask the question, doesn't he?
Is it Echo the Dolphin, Defenders of the Future, James?
It is indeed. Well done. That was 15 questions. Well done. Echo the Dolphin, Defender of the Future, released in 2000 across all regions, released on Dreamcast and, of course, PS2 as well. Yeah, one of the games that got ported over following the death of our beloved console. God, I gotta try and find ways to trip you guys up. Honestly, they're getting too easy now.
If you did a Japanese exclusive, that would really knock us for six. Yeah,
yeah. I'll think about that for the next time. Well done, guys. Good job. Good job. All right, then. So before we leave everyone to go to enjoy their Halloween candies, where can we find everyone? Brian, what about you, first of all?
I don't remember anymore. I don't really check a lot of social media these days, but I guess Twitter or whatever it's called.
Just walk around Seattle, find a Starbucks. Yeah. You might see Brian sat in one of the many Starbucks over there.
You will not find me in a Starbucks. I'm sorry. We have way too many better coffee places. I would probably say a Virtua Schlub or at Virtua Schlub and or Jet Brian Radio on either of those, either Blue Sky or Twitter. And then I also have a blog that I haven't updated in a while. I think the last thing I wrote about was Disaster Report 4, which actually resonated with me in a pretty similar way that Illbleed does. But that is thevirtuaplanet.com.
Nice. Mike?
Yeah, I'm on Elon Musk's hellscape as well. I am at Dreamcast Pix, which is where I share information about the A to Z guide and just random Dreamcast mumblings. I'm also on my personal account at space_turnip, where I don't discuss Dreamcast at all.
Lovely. And Lewis?
I'm at LewisJFC on Twitter and... the blog, which you'll plug in a second, I write stuff on. That's me.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously don't forget to check us out online, thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. We are on Twitter or X, whatever you prefer to call it, at the DC Junkyard. And if you are feeling generous and want to donate a few VMU batteries to us, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/DC Junkyard. That's about all we've got time for today. Thank you so much to my co-hosts for joining me, getting you all in the Halloween mood. And until next time, we shall see you then. This is a Dreamcast.
Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers. Please stop this disc now.